So the title is a bit of a mouthful, but I kind of felt the need to separate these two concepts because for me it's important for them to be separated. So I chose a longer title instead of a shorter one and more inaccurate. So I kind of like to spoil my talks a bit from the beginning, so I'll just tell you what I'll say shortly and then I'll just expand on it. So broadcasting is a technique where in a Bell scenario you take a party and you split it into several sub-parties. So that's the main idea. And then what we do is show that you can use this idea, and it's useful for showing activation of non-locality on the one side, where you assume just shared randomness and more general theories. You can also certify entanglement of states, where the assumptions are different, where you assume everything is quantum. And so when you can show better than other techniques. And then you can also do it for hybrid scenarios, where you assume only part of it is quantum and the rest is general, like steering scenarios. So in all of these three, broadcasting is a technique that's useful for these things. So these are the faces of people that have worked on this over the years. So these three are the people that first proposed this idea of subsplitting parties into smaller local ones. And then these other ones, with me included, we worked on a continuation of this idea. So what I label as results in this talk are what's found in this paper, which is from this year. So as with any presentation on Bell non-locality, it needs to start with the standard Bell scenario. And I guess most people are familiar with it. I don't know if, I guess you also know about it. Okay, so I can go more or less fast. So you have two space-like separated parties, and they play a game where they output some numbers given a choice of input. So I don't explain this very well because I guess most people are familiar with it. So given a local choice of a setting or an input, a party then presents an output. And what we have at the end of this experiment is a table of probabilities, probability of seeing some outcomes given some inputs. And we say that this admits a local model if it can be explained as just some ignorance of a hidden variable that determines the local response given the inputs. But there are more general ways in which you can generate correlations. So we can also use quantum theory, where we have a bipartite quantum state. We do local measurements. The output of these measurements is what the parties report. And then we have the probabilities of these outcomes given the choice of measurements. And this defines a set of probabilities. Let's say this set of possible tables of probabilities is strictly larger than the one before. So this is the result of Bell's theorem, that they're not that local is included in quantum. And then we can also have, let's say, the most general table of probabilities that we can have is simply the one that obeys no signaling, which is the condition that one party cannot communicate with the other. They're space-like separated, so the marginals of both cannot depend on the setting of the others. So the main question that has been unsolved for all these years is if every entangled state can lead to non-local correlations. This is known to be true for pure states, but not for mixed states. So no. And how do you know that this is not true? Because you can take an entangled state, and I label it as LHV, if for this entangled states, for any kind of measurement you choose here, you can show that for all of them, you have a local decomposition. And I need to emphasize that this could be potentially a continuous number of settings. So it can be a very large probability table. So if I state that the statement that a quantum state is local is a very strong statement, because it's for any imaginable measurement.
Christian.
Yes.
Your measurements are allowed to be POVMs, not necessarily projective, yes?
Yes. So if it's projective, I will label it as projective LHV. And if it's proven to be local for also POVMs, then it's POVM LHV.
Okay. And the default LHV is POVM LHV.
No, I will always specify which one it is.
Okay.
So what's known about these local models? So I will mention non-results for a specific family of states, which is the isotropic state. Sorry, maybe it's a bit small. So this is the Bell state, and it's depolarized. So you mix it with the identity over 4. So this is a very rudimentary and simple model of noise. It's not experimentally what happens, but it's a very easy thing to work with, I would say. And yes, so when alpha is 1, we have a Bell state, and with 0, we have the uniform state. Then we know that it's entangled above 1/3. And historically, Werner was the first to show that for projective measurements, you have a local model, a PVM local model, up to 1/2. And then Barrett showed that when you include POVMs, then you have one up to 5/12. And in recent years, including this year, people have improved these results to go higher than this with algorithmic techniques, which I can explain if anyone is interested. But for now, we only care about the fact that it's improved. So this is from one side, from, let's say, from the local model side. But we can also consider the other side, which is how much standard Bell non-locality can you violate here? Is there a question? No.
When you're saying those numbers, so they're just from numerics. We don't know if they're e to the something.
So these, I think they're analytical, at least the 1/2 for sure. And this, the algorithm is numerical, but they project to an analytical solution.
OK, so they do know exactly.
Yes. No, not exactly the number, but given a number. OK, no, they have exact lower and upper bounds. But
okay.
It's not, well, I will.
If it's related to the Euler constant or square root of.
It's related to the Grothendieck constant.
Oh, I see. So they know these things.
No, it's difficult to estimate its value.
Okay.
But you can, maybe I can explain what it is. Well, I can do it later, maybe. So I want to, okay, so maybe it will be clear what I want to say. If we include the standard non-locality, then CHSH is 1/√2. And then these algorithmic methods show non-locality down to 696. So it's like a very, very close to the value for the threshold for projective LHV models. But it's unknown if this gap is 0 or not. So there is a lower bound for which we can assure you have the projective LHV. And there's an upper bound for which for sure you have Bell non-locality, but in between you don't know. So, okay, so here I can make a small parenthesis. And I think the fact that it's so close, I said the gap could be 0, but actually could be negative. Because, I mean, if you manage to show non-locality below the PVM threshold, then you prove that with POVMs, you have some advantage for Bell non-locality, which is also an open question. POVMs have been shown to be useful for randomness certification and stuff like this. But it hasn't been shown to be more useful than projective measurements for just standard Bell non-locality. So this would be one way to.
Sorry, Christian.
Yes.
If it were negative, that would mean that you have a Bell inequality which you could only violate with POVM.
Exactly.
And not PVMs.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the open question, whether
yes.
there are such Bell inequalities?
Yes.
Okay. But how does that fit with this Dijkstra-Spring and Neumark dilation theory? Like, just like if I can do it with POVM. Like
no, but if, PVM. Okay, so if I have a 2-qubit state,
yeah.
When I say only projective measurements, basically I say only 2 outcome measurements on the qubit. If I have the dilation and the projective here, that's basically a POVM.
Got it. Okay.
Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, so you don't need, I don't think you would need a Bell inequality that can only be violated by POVMs. But it would be a Bell inequality where for some states, the only way to achieve a violation of that Bell inequality is with POVMs.
Okay, that's a good point. Yes. It would have the same value for generically, but if you restrict, like in this, in what I said, basically it's for this state only that this is known.
I think it speaks to the dilation because you can always then find another state, which is which would give you the same violation for PVM by actually considering the dilation of the POVM and folding that into the original protocol.
This axis is only meaningful if we're talking about two qubit states with that alpha as a parameter in a certain family of two qubit states.
Sure.
So you could never go to the state on the ancillas as well and still have these numbers be meaningful.
Okay, so then we could say, like, even if we weren't talking about like ball states, you could certainly say that like the Bell inequality violation on qubits could have a different range for POVMs than for PVMs, whereas the Bell inequality can't have a different range or POVMs, PVMs, if you're not restricting the dimension of the minimum distance.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then the question now is... Yes?
So what is Grothendieck's constant?
Yeah, I can define it. So... assume you have a square matrix. Which satisfies this. Then, if you maybe beta. So these are numbers between 0 and 1. So now you can lift this to vectors. So you have the same matrix. But these are like not just numbers between 0 and 1, but unit vectors. Then Grothendieck's constant is the thing that bounds this. And there is no limit on the size of this matrix. Like,
you mean the limit on the size of the vector?
Like for any m.
So
I think, maybe I take back this, but I think it's true. But
so you keep the range of the sum.
Oh, no, it's the same here, but let's say you fix an m.
Is it, do you expect those new vector spaces to be infinite dimensional?
I don't remember what constraint was on the length of these vectors, but we could check it out.
This is a number.
Yes,
real number.
Which is smaller than one, or bigger than one. I think it's bigger than one.
I don't know what the number is.
There are bounds on the number.
The
and the bounds on those numbers are related to the bound of that critical threshold.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Is this related to some crazy category theory or something?
No.
Why is Grothendieck's name attached to it?
You know about him. He was like a bit of a recluse. He was outside the academic system and he was, well, anyway, there's parentheses within a parenthesis. But.
I know him and in terms of his interactions with Bourbaki. Second generation of Bourbaki and told them they shouldn't have used set theory, they should have used category theory. And so he didn't stay around for long.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, so there is this connection between these questions. Okay, so the question was, for example, take one of these states, which in the standard Bell scenario, basically it's interchangeable with shared randomness. You cannot use it to get anything more than that. Is it always the case? Can I just swap them? And the answer is no, again. And this, we know this because of activation of Bell non-locality, which is just the name of how you design these protocols where swapping the state with shared randomness is not equivalent. So a brief, I think there's a mouse. Now it's fixed. So a historical overview on this. The first example of activation is from Popescu in the year I was born. and he showed that if you do some filtering before you do the Bell test, then you can get a Bell inequality violation. So filtering means do a measurement, and you only continue the protocol when you see the outcome, this specific outcome. So it's the same as measuring and renormalizing. And then people have generalized this to like sequences of rounds of filters. So here, if you look at the local model, you should understand it as this thing is one-way signaling to the next things. OK, so that's one example. So this only uses one copy of the state. And then there's other examples where they use multiple copies of the state. So once you have multiple copies, you can consider either putting them in a network or even just the standard Bell scenario. If you assume you have many copies of your source, then you have the possibility of performing entangling measurements, which is a new, more powerful thing you can do.
Christian, in the previous slide, you had a comment at the bottom. No example of advantage with respect to activation.
So by hidden, I mean only one extra layer and sequential be more. So to my knowledge, there is no example of adding more being better than just adding one.
Got it. OK, thanks.
OK, so this one in the literature is called superactivation. And I emphasize it because out of these techniques I mentioned, for our benchmark state, which is the isotropic state, is the only one that gives non-trivial results. Oh, no, sorry. This also works, but doesn't work as well as superactivation. So with superactivation, actually, you get the whole range of entanglement. So for the whole range of entanglement, you get non-locality with this protocol. So then is there nothing left to be done? I would say that, I forgot to say that for the isotropic state, I said it, actually. The sequential doesn't work. And for superactivation, the closer you get to one-third, the number of copies that you need diverges. So you get infinity if you want to certify the entanglement of the whole range. And even getting like to 60% or 65 mixture with uniform state, you need like 20 copies and entangling measurements. So as an academic result, this is fine. In our imagination, we have infinite states we can use. But there are some connections between non-locality and some protocols or some applications for DIQKD or randomness certification. And for those, you need an experimental implementation. The way activation ties with these applications is that often the states that have local models are noisy states. So the hope would be that if you, for these LHV states, which are often noisy, you can show non-locality. Then if you show it in a way that's useful for a protocol, then it's not only a fundamental result, but also potentially useful result. So what we'd like to do is to also get activation, but with a more reasonable number of resources. And also, it's worth mentioning that this works for the whole range for this state. But in general, it doesn't work for all entangled states. There is a well-defined threshold where superactivation doesn't work anymore. But I think superactivation is a specific way of using copies of entangled quantum states. It's not all possible ways of using many copies of entangled quantum states. So it's not a proof that using many copies cannot work to show activation for all entangled states, only that this specific thing has a limit. So some intuition for this would be that.
I didn't follow the claim, but what can't be done for all entangled states? I missed it.
So maybe this will help. So in this case, for the whole range of alpha, where the state is entangled, you get non-locality through superactivation. But there are entangled states where superactivation doesn't work.
You said there are entangled, you mean outside the...
Outside the isotropic state. Yes, exactly.
I see.
And the intuition for this...
So the background. So there are states outside the isotropic cloud for which you can show that there's a POVM LHV. And furthermore, you can show that superactivation also doesn't allow you to find the non-locality. Have I got that right?
So it's not showing that for superactivation you have a local model, which would be saying there is no conceivable way in which superactivation could show non-locality, only that the protocol they proposed only works up to some value. Does that make sense? It's like saying I show a Bell inequality violation, it works for this range of values. But I'm not proving that there cannot exist one.
When you say some range of value, you mean that there's another parameter like alpha in the isotropic states, which now applies to this?
No.
States? No.
So I think it's the entanglement fraction or something like this, the overlap with the Bell state of the corresponding dimension.
So it is a bit of an analog of alpha.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So there's...
Yeah, because here it's one-third, the entanglement fraction. So this is why it covers the whole range. So what I was going to say for intuition is that if you combine multiple copies with filtering, you can basically do distillation. And then with that, you can extract Bell states, and then you can get non-locality from that. But distillation doesn't work for all entangled states. So this is like one way to conceptualize how this could be limited. But superactivation is not distillation, but I'm just giving some intuition. OK, so then what's broadcasting all about? So I said that it consists of splitting a party in a Bell scenario into several subparties. So how would I motivate this? So the way I think about it is that in a Bell scenario, you cannot create non-locality with local operations. So you can think that I have a local channel, and then I do my measurement. So I would introduce broadcasting by saying that you do your local transformation, and then you share this with two parties, and then they do local measurements. Is this clear? So you can imagine like the dotted box is the original Bob, Bob zero. And he could either do a joint global measurement, and then you just get back to the standard Bell non-locality. And with this scenario, you don't get non-locality. But then when we interpret that Bob in his lab, he has two sublabs that are space-like separated that do local measurements after some transformation, then I will show you that you do get non-classical behavior. Okay, so this is a polytope. And I want to take a minute to explain why this constraint. So if you don't restrict these to be no signaling, but they can be anything, then it's just one single party. So it's back to the standard Bell scenario. But if you restrict this to be local, then this channel potentially could create a Bell state, and you would violate this decomposition. By this, I mean with locality here. And that's fine, but the point of all of this is to certify non-classicality of the source. So we want a definition of classicality here that is insensitive to non-classicality that this could produce. Does it make sense? So if this is no signaling, I could produce any number of PR boxes here, and this would still be local with this definition. But if you plug in some quantum state here and you get something non-local, for sure the non-classicality is in this state. So the channel cannot help in this sense. OK.
Can you clarify what the no signaling restriction is? Does that just mean that?
So it just means that I have this decomposition. That's it.
But over inside the dash box, you're just saying that Charlie's outcome can't depend statistically on Bob's setting and vice versa.
Exactly. Yes. Okay. But they are correlated by lambda. But in a way that Bob and Charlie can still have a no signaling, potentially no signaling statistic, conditioned on lambda. OK, so this is a polytope. We can characterize it by LPs. And then and there exists a quantum strategy where you actually are outside this thing. And this is just the quantum strategy. It's not worth spending too much time staring at it. The inequality does have a nice compact form. So in this scenario, I didn't say, but Alice has three settings, and the rest have two and two. And what this is doing is there's CHSH between the first two settings of Alice and Charlie. And then Bob, I have no idea what he's doing, but he appears like that. But you can regroup algebraically into a CHSH and some things. And this L is the local bound for CHSH. Anyway, it's just a nice compact inequality. With this quantum strategy, you get some value. And then when you mix it with noise, you get like way below the value for projective LHV. And it's also analytical and nice.
Your original source, a 2-qubit source in this?
Yes. So the channel, what it does, it maps the 0 to 0, 0 and the 1 to 1, 1. So when you act with this on the Bell state, you get the JHZ state. So this is below the PVM LHV bound, not quite with the POVM LHV bound. But just for your information, there are other states for which broadcasting does give activation for POVM local states. just not the isotropic one. But seeing how big the gap is here, it's a natural question, like, does it work for POVM local states? And it does. OK, so this is, I think I took a while for the context, but then I'll go more quickly over the new results in the continuation of the, yes, in what, yeah, basically, in the paper we worked on. So the results are in these three groups of non-locality only, assuming quantum theory, and hybrid. So for non-locality only, we define some, instead of CHSH, we generalize to other bipartite inequalities, and we show that this is valid in general for broadcasting scenarios. We show some stronger examples of violation of genuine net non-locality. And we show that broadcasting is also useful to improve thresholds for detection efficiencies in the, let's say, failure rates, independent failure rates for each detector. And also more examples of activations of POVM HV states. Then for this, maybe I should clarify a bit the difference between, because every example of non-locality is a way to certify entanglement, but not all ways to certify entanglement from the probability tables are non-locality. So for the standard Bell scenario, it's kind of equivalent, because if you assume everything is quantum and you plug in a separable state, you basically get a local model. So for standard non-locality, it's equivalent. But if we go to broadcasting, and then we assume that everything is quantum, then we need to restrict this to also be quantum, not no signaling anymore. So in principle, it's a different set of probability tables. But the inequality that we had before, it's saturated by deterministic strategies for BC. So the results still hold. So we still have the same value. But can we do better? So if we go to a symmetric broadcasting scenario, then this works quite well for device independent, like where we assume everything is quantum. So then the appropriate description of this set of correlations is where we have quantum for AD and quantum for BC. But this is a very non-convex problem, and it's very difficult to solve exactly, or, well, exactly even the quantum set you cannot solve. But let's say it's difficult to work with as it's written here. So we used a relaxation where instead of assuming it's separable and getting this decomposition, you assume the state is PPT. And then there are techniques to relax or characterize the set of probability tables you can get from measuring a PPT state. This we can talk about if you want, but it's an SDP. And with this, you get basically certification for almost the whole range of entanglement, but assuming quantum everywhere. Yeah, and for comparison, to get to the same 338, you need, yeah, as I said, a lot of copies. So why do I want to make the distinction between non-locality and entanglement certification? Because non-locality does have this connection with some protocols like the IQKT, but just entanglement certification does not. So in this sense, this result is useful to certify entanglement, but it cannot have a connection with the IQKD or things like this, because you cannot ensure that there is, let's say, in a sense, pure randomness. I don't know if that's the word to describe it, but when I see it with non-locality, you can sort of certify that you cannot have a local deterministic response function, no? And somehow that's what I see to be the fuel for these the IQKD protocols. But with this, you have none of that. And also, I guess here I'm comparing apples to oranges, because this is non-locality and this is entanglement certification only. So the correct comparison would be to another technique for certifying entanglement, which, well, it's a bit complex to explain, but you also assume quantum theory, and if you trust the inputs to your box, you can certify the entanglement of all quantum states, and then you self-test the inputs to the box, and then it's fully device independent. And that works for any bipartite state. But even if it works for any bipartite state, I think it's less robust to noise in the probability table itself because you need to do self-testing. So there is part of the protocol where you need some where it's not so robust against noise. I'm not sure if it's just more confusing or it's clear the distinction I want to make between DUI entanglement certification and activation of non-locality. Is that clear?
It wasn't for me.
Okay. So I guess, so maybe in this picture it's good enough. So with activation on locality, here I would assume no signaling boxes, but now I'm assuming quantum theory. And I'm not an expert on the DUI-QKD, but I think just showing an entanglement for this state doesn't mean that now you can use it for the DUI-QKD. For that, you need some sort of non-locality, no? Even if it's this more general notion of non-locality, it's not Bell non-locality. But I'm also a bit confused about this, but I'm confused. It's clear to me the difference, but the statement that when you assume everything is quantum, it's less useful for DUI-QKD, I might be challenged on this. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know.
If I got it basically right, that you're saying if I allow the local labs to use PR boxes rather than quantum, I might be able to explain the observed correlations with less entanglement between the labs. And then the device-independent setting doesn't warrant assuming quantum sources within the lab, and therefore I should allow that maybe there's less entanglement between the labs than my analysis shows. Is that... I got it right or no?
I don't have such an example, but it could possibly be that this is the case. And now I realize when you were explaining it that I'm misusing the word DI. It should be semi-DI because I make the assumption that the boxes are quantum. So I've been using the whole time. So device independent maybe strictly means non-locality, I would say. And once you make an assumption on the boxes beyond just classical or no signaling, that's when you go to the regime of semi-device. But some people also would call this device independent. So it's up to you, I guess, how you call it.
But taking your definition of semi-device independent, so I'm allowed to assume that the boxes next to the labs are quantum. Does that warrant assuming, can I also assume that they have this internal causal structure that you've drawn with a quantum source between the two parts? Is that also...
Yes. So let's say for me, this would be fully device independent. And basically, if a probability admits this decomposition, it fits this causal picture, no? So conditioned, this would be assuming the state is separable, I get this thing. But if it's not separable, it just goes through the channels and you get some probability at the end, which potentially might not be expressible in this form.
I'm a little confused as to why you're calling it entanglement certification as opposed to like certification of
non-classicality
of a local model, right? So whether it's a device-independent conclusion that you broadcast, you make very weak assumptions about what's happening after the broadcasting. So now you make stronger assumptions, and with the stronger assumptions, things that previously you could not have concluded were non-classical are now non-classical. But
within the box of quantum theory, I'm basically using NPA here to certify this, which is fine if you want to. But what I think is that just because you certify this non-classicality doesn't mean it's non-classicality useful for common tasks or protocols in the field. I don't know if that's convincing or not. But yeah, it's a completely valid notion of non-classicality, no? Okay, maybe I'll go on.
Okay, so what you're doing is you're showing that rho is not separable, right? Because if it was separable, then P should be in the set of correlations, which are PPT realizable for any given PC. That's a relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly, rho is not separable.
Yes.
And it feels like, okay, yeah, that's a form of entanglement typification, but it's also a way of like, why not just call that like non-locality activation? Because ultimately you're saying that like, it's, the way I'm thinking about it is it's better call it semi-device independent.
Yeah, so it should be semi-device independent. No. Entanglement, no, it's not non-locality.
Because you're acting, you're saying like, you know, here's a state, if we just consider just sort of standard Bell tests, it would admit a local model. Now, the state does not admit a local model when we subject it to these states, because if it admitted a local model, then it should be consistent with a separable one. But I think it's semantics. We can.
Yeah, maybe it's just semantics. But I didn't mention that actually, if here you replace with no signaling both sides,
mm-hmm.
numerically the results are not so good. You only go down from 577 to 566. So it's a very small improvement of 0.01. But when you assume that both are quantum, the condition is so strong that you go to 1/3. So that's kind of surprising to me.
Richard, can I make one last attempt to try to understand this distinction between semi-device dependent entanglement certification and non-locality certification? So if we go back to just the two qubit isotropic states.
Yeah, so maybe this is the best slide to discuss about this.
This is the one, sorry.
This is the best slide because the distinction is literally right here. There are different sets of correlations. Sorry, go on. You were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say something that's not about this scenario, but
can go to the other one.
Maybe be helpful. So if we left out the device independence, then clearly, you know, certifying entanglement is different from certifying non-locality because I could, you know, assume quantum theory and then show, oh yeah, I don't have a separable state. I have something with alpha equal to greater than 1/3.
Yeah.
And yet no POVM or PVM will ever generate a Bell quality violation. So there, you know, sort of quantum entanglement certification is distinct from non-locality certification. But in that context, of course, if we're talking about device independent, then we would not want to assume quantum theory, and the two things would coincide. If I can prove that there's entanglement, that's because I'm proving that there's non-locality. So am I right so far that in that context there'd be no way of driving a wedge between?
If you manage to show that every entangled state violates some sort of Bell inequality in more complex scenarios, yes, there is no wedge in that case. But that's the goal of this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wasn't trying to appeal to more complicated scenarios. It just seemed to me that the very correlations that you have in this experiment where you're measuring an isotropic two-qubit state with some POVMs,
yeah.
If I show that those correlations violate Bell inequalities, I show that I needed entangled states to do it, but not vice versa, right?
Yes. Okay, so you're saying you take a state, if it violates a Bell inequality, it comes from an entangled. You take a table of probabilities. If it violates a Bell inequality, it proves that if it's coming from a quantum source, it must be entangled.
Right.
And not vice versa.
Not vice versa, because I can always find a separable state of higher dimension that could explain it if there's a local hidden variable model. The local hidden variable model, you know,
yes,
can also be simulated by some unentangled state of high enough dimension. So I guess I'm trying to understand what changes now that you're in this new broadcast scenario, why suddenly there is a wedge between entanglement certification and non-locality. So maybe now.
Sorry, by wedge, what does the word mean for you? For me, it's the.
Just a difference. Like you're saying, it's if I have a device-independent entanglement certification, that's not the same as non-locality certification.
So I would mean that, let's say, like above this, it's entangled and it violates broadcast non-locality. But in this regime, like here, no? Here we have that with the SDP, with NPA, we get that the state is entangled. but we didn't manage to find any kind of broadcast non-locality. So there's still the same relationship as with standard non-locality, just that in the broadcast scenario. There are still states which actually know, because in the broadcast one, we don't actually know the LHV model. Sorry, these LHV models are for the standard Bell scenario. So there is nothing known about a state which can never violate the broadcast Bell inequality. That would make it more analogous.
It feels to me like there's broadcasting to agents, and then you can talk about like the relationship between the agents. So there's broadcasting to, you know, independent agents. There's broadcasting to agents who can coordinate through some non-signaling resource.
Yes.
Broadcasting to agents who can coordinate by means of a quantum dynamic pulse.
Yes.
I assume you could also talk about like broadcasting to agents where there's a communication structure, which I think is just filtering.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying it goes to the first, then that is used to sort of go to the
yeah.
second.
So actually we tried that and it doesn't work so well, numerically at least. But yeah.
But either way, it's like broadcasting plus some assumption about how the agents can interact to achieve their outputs given the broadcast input. And in all these paradigms, whether it's, you know, assumptions about the nature of the agents, which appeals to quantum theory, assumptions about the agents that doesn't refer to quantum theory, it's still device independent, right? Like you don't need to know what the agents.
Yes, you only need the probability table with these assumptions.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think probability table plus assumptions indicates that the original state, which we know can generate this probability,
mm-hmm.
must be non-zero. That feels like a form of non-locality activation.
I'd say non-classicality activation, not non-locality activation.
Okay,
whatever. I think, we can debate this more some other time. Okay, so then the last one is just these hybrid scenarios where you have your notion of classicality here, and with broadcasting you can also show activation. So in this size, with steering, you assume only one side is trusted, and they do a quantum measurement, and yeah, so that's the last result I wanted to mention. And then in the open questions, there's actually two ideas which I think could prove interesting. I don't know if I put them on the slide. One idea is to just see if it's experimentally implementable. But then there is one idea which I could get some feedback on, which is touches a bit with how you were describing everything, which is you have some parties that have some interaction between them. And if I write the full expression of what broadcasting kind of does, is there's a local channel on this half of the Bell state. But then this channel, I could move it to the measurements. And then I could see this whole thing as just an effective POVM with some no signaling constraints. So when I sum over this index B1, the resulting operator should not depend on any Y1 and the opposite. Yes? But in what we were doing before, to find examples of quantum strategies, we were doing a seesaw where you fix the channel and all but one of the measurements, and you optimize over that. And you iterate over channel, measurement, etc. But if we do this reformulation, this is a one-shot SDP, no? It's still a seesaw from Alice and this effective Bob. But then instead of optimizing over three things, we do a one-shot optimization, we get this. And it's always for the isotropic state, it's always a single qubit POVM. So if you do this broadcasting to 100 parties, it will always be a single qubit POVM with some no signaling constraints. But for this to be equivalent, I would need to find a way to go back, no? So from any numerical solution to this, can I always find local measurements and a channel that shows that it's actually a broadcasting protocol. So this is like a bounty for you. I can buy you snacks with my visitor account if you can help me solve this.
So my intuition is that it's not going to be true, because so the analog would be, if there's something in the space of measurements that's like a PR box, it's no signaling, but it can't be realized in quantum theory, and then I would imagine, you know, that there'd be some B naught Y1, Y2, B1, B2 that satisfies, you know, signaling constraints, but no way of implementing it with this broadcast map and local measurements.
But here it's fully quantum. There is no PR box.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is that if you think about a two input, two output quantum channel, two qubits go in, two qubits go out. So in place of your measurement, just think of this two qubit channel. And then somebody says to me, all right, I've got a two qubit channel and it's no signaling from the left to the right. Is it the case that I can always implement it with a quantum common cause? The answer is no, because I could just dephase each of the inputs and outputs, give it PR box functionality, and then I know there's no way to realize it quantumly. So that's just an example of something that is quantum.
But how can you give it the PR box functionality within quantum theory?
You do it without using a common cause. So you can engineer, like if I say, I'm just telling you the input output functionality of a two qubit channel, and I'm not stipulating that it has to be quantum common cause. And then I ask you to go looking for a quantum common cause decomposition. Turns out sometimes the answer is no, you can't find one. Even though there's no signaling in both directions.
And okay.
So my guess then is that there's probably something analogous here.
So then the most relevant question would be, given a numerical solution, maybe I could add some noise to it, and then it becomes realizable in a broadcast way. And maybe this is already better than what I would get by doing this stupid optimization.
I think that that's actually a pretty compelling argument, because you could imagine a particular no signaling POVM on one qubit, which ignores the qubit, and is such that for Y1 and Y2 being 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0.
Okay, so it has, okay, I understand now.
And
it gives the probabilities of a PR box.
Right, okay. It just returns the probability of your work.
And you can do it because potentially it's even a joint measurement, no? It only has the no signaling. It can be, okay.
But it can't be expressed as a product measurement on a quantum state or on any broadcasting.
Okay, now that's disappointing. I had some hope for this idea, but well, maybe I can still add some noise to it and then it becomes realizable.
Maybe.
Or maybe I just find another way to justify using these effective POVMs with no signaling. Because the way to justify through broadcasting is nice, because you can just space-like separate things. And then you can design an experiment where everything is space-like separated, so it's easy to justify this structure on the POVM, the no signaling structure. But if I only have the no signaling structure and that's it, then how do I certify this in a lab? You know? But maybe there's another way to see it. Okay, so then the second idea I had was to maybe connect it with networks. So if I go to, let's say, three parties, if I wrote this as a causal diagram, abusing a bit the notation, I could imagine that it's something like this. But now maybe I could envision protocols where I could make an assumption here. Instead of just a global source, I could justify having something like a triangle or things like this. And already the global source gives the results there. It cannot get worse. So this can only get better. So I was thinking to explore if there are natural ways and not just forcing this triangle or bilocal structure of the, like if I see this as a big lab, it could not be just local parties, but maybe they could have a certain distribution of sources or whatever. So that's kind of a natural connection with networks, I would say. And that's everything I wanted to say.
was. So I think we have some time for a few more questions. Anyone?
So I should buy you a snack now.
You did.
I thought the snack was for helping you prove the character or something.
That's all.
Well, the snack is for anything useful about this.
Well, it's not your money, so.
Yeah, it's not. Well, I can do it with my own money.
Well, you can buy the snack for Rob using Rob's money.
But that's what he just said. Like, it would be meaningless if it's his.
I have two questions, but if anyone else.
I have a short question. So I don't know much about multipartite stuff, but you made a reference to Popescu 95. Could you repeat what that reference was?
Yes, so in that paper, he showed that if you do a Bell test after you filter, you get non-locality. And by filter, I mean Alice and Bob do a measurement, and then they only continue if you get a certain outcome. So it's like a post-selection on the whole.
Maybe you can bring my attention to it after exactly the article.
Sure.
Good. Yeah. So two questions. One is going conceptual and the other a little more technical. So here you've considered where the agents are coordinated by a non-signaling resource, and then you consider where the agents are coordinated by a quantum resource, and you showed that you can falsify classical explanations for the resulting correlations when you assume that the agents are limited to a quantum resource, where you would not have been able to falsify the same data table as having a classical origin if the agents were coordinated by non-signaling resource. You can do more. What about stronger assumptions? Why not consider agents who are coordinated only by a local source or agents which are independent? Could you not use those to obtain even stronger results?
You mean the flavor of this?
No, I mean like instead of having like a triangle structure, have like
just two for example, two independent parties. No?
Two independent parties. Yes. So you broadcast to completely independent parties, and you assume that you can broadcast them.
But if you broadcast the output of the channel, this channel depends on. So you're saying these parties will not use the result of the channel, no? Because the channel correlates them. They cannot be independent if there's the channel.
So can would it help to say that they have no further coordination beyond the result of the channel? So like, yes, if the original state is unlimited Schrödinger randomness, then the parties can be coordinated with unlimited Schrödinger randomness.
Yes.
By doing some kind of broadcasting. But they can't achieve anything quantum among themselves unless there was quantumness in the original source. So even like...
Yeah, so restrict the channel to, in some sense, not create non-classicality.
Yes.
But I don't know what the appropriate definition for that would be.
Well, I think it's just you don't allow the agents to have access to any further resource other than the broadcast of the original resource. And so if you assume that the original resource is...
So you would assume it's a 3-qubit state, the original one.
You assume it's a local state, right? Because like, your whole point is to prove that like it cannot be given a local model.
But then if you have a 2-qubit state, the only way to get two parties to measure it is to map 1-qubit to 2-qubits. So you need to manipulate it somehow.
But I mean, you're already introducing sort of the quantum problem. I'm saying like, you have a 2-qubit state, and you're going to consider a particular broadcast map. But what you want to do is for falsification, maybe let me ask the other question, because it could be that I'm misunderstanding. So, even here, when you have like this proof of non-separability, how does that work? How do you show that there was that? So you give me like here's the particular state, here is the broadcast map, here are the measurements. You get a data table, right? Wonderful. But just because you found a nice broadcast map and nice measurements for the parties after broadcasting. How do you know that the resulting correlation could not have been explained if the original resource was a classical resource and the parties who are sitting sort of on the side of the broadcast
have access to a quantum common cause. Because what you want to do is you want to say like, or maybe that's not what you're doing. Maybe I misunderstood what you're saying. And what you're doing is it's just a straight up locality. So you're just saying like, look, here is a multipartite scenario, which is non-local. And as soon as it's non-local, then if my protocol to getting there involves like broadcasting, that exposes not, you know, entanglement of the original state. Because otherwise, like, you need to like define this like other polytope or like non-polytope or some set of correlations, which is the set of correlations which is achievable here, where Alice is connected to Bob and Charlie via shared randomness, but Bob and Charlie are connected via quantum common cause. So like that's a causal scenario.
But
you want to show that you're not in that set.
But this is this, no? This is a quantum common cause for Bob and Charlie, and
okay, and so
shared randomness for everyone.
Show that the resulting data table after broadcast is not achievable by the equation up top.
Yes.
And how do you do that?
So this particular one is an SDP. If you want, I can write it for you if you want.
And that's true even in the case of like.
So in that decomposition, you can write P as the sum of deterministic for Alice, and then P of BC given X, Y, no, Y, Z, lambda. And these are just elements of some NPA. And you have lambda moment matrices.
Okay.
These are subnormalized. But when you sum over lambda as well, they sum to 1. So this is a valid characterization of that set of correlations. So it's a relaxation, but it's doable.
And when you have the
symmetric one, it's not so easy because AD is also quantum, and that's why we need to use this PPT relaxation.
Because you can't assume like a finite cardinality for lambda?
No, you cannot assume a finite cardinality. I would say that's the problem. Here lambda can be infinite, no?
Okay, so I think maybe this is another conversation we can have, but I think that while lambda could be infinite, you could show that.
Well, even if lambda is finite, you get a product of variables here, which you cannot really do away with. So it's an inherently non-convex problem. And here you can kind of only have one variable.
Yeah, it's inherently non-convex, I agree. Okay.
And then here, yes, like you get correlations which even if these share a quantum common cause and these share a quantum common cause are not explainable with.
And that's why you have a relaxation for this because of the non-convexity?
Yes. So then doing the set of PPT achievable correlations on the bipartition, on this bipartition, that works and it's doable.
Cool.
And I have some implementations of this, so if you want to use it for something.
There's no, I have a more broad philosophical question, I guess.
Sorry, can we just finish the final thought on this?
Sure.
Which is like, you chose PPT because that is a relaxation, but in principle, like, what you're trying to do is impose, like, that it is separable along
yes, exactly.
the partition, but it could be entangled across AD, it could be entangled across
yes.
AD. Just
so ideally, we want to do this set of correlations, but it's very hard. So we relaxed this to the other set of correlations, which is the PPT correlations. But yes, ideally, we want this.
Okay.
But even with the relaxation, we get 1/3, so it works pretty well, actually.
Okay. Thanks.
I guess I'm curious about the overall motivations for introducing this sort of broadcast way of detecting non-locality and entanglement, in addition to the superactivation approach, the activated approach. I'm a bit, I guess the thing that I don't like is to try to define a kind of classical, non-classical distinction for bipartite states in terms of whether or not the yield certain correlations, like violations of Bell inequalities. So like, hey, I'm not saying this is your point of view, but I want to object to a point of view, and then you can tell me where you're coming from. But if somebody says, oh, well, you know, to figure out which bipartite states are classical and which are non-classical, we should define that in terms of whether they can be converted into a box, meaning a process with classical inputs and outputs, that violates Bell inequalities or not. Right? Like that's going to be our definition of the classical non-classical boundary for states. It's going to piggyback on the classical non-classical boundary for boxes, which is given in terms of Bell inequality violations and violations. So what's wrong with that? I would say the alternative, which I think is better, is to just define the classical non-classical boundary from a kind of resource theory perspective in terms of whether that bipartite state can be generated by local operations and shared randomness or not, period. If it can, we'll call it classical. If it can't, we'll call it non-classical. So that's sort of the competing proposal.
So then is that the same as separable states?
Mm-hmm. Right. In that case, it would be separable versus non-separable. And so the argument in favor of that is that you know, if you ask what established the classical non-classical boundary over in the box language, the answer was again, you know, what can you achieve with shared randomness? So you're already appealing to what you can achieve with shared randomness over here on the side of boxes. So why didn't you just appeal to directly on the side of states as your definition of classical non-classical? And secondly, there's something pretty arbitrary about focusing on the state to box transformation as the way to define classical non-classical boundary on states. Why didn't I convert those states into something more complicated than boxes, like things that might have, you know, quantum inputs or quantum outputs, like channels. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different types of things, bipartite things you could go to. And so, you know, having thought about these sorts of issues of the interplay of entanglement and non-locality from a resource theory perspective, it really seemed that all these different types of processes, you know, the way we define the boundary for all of them is the same. You know, what can you achieve with LOSR, what can't you? So anyway, that's all this to say that I'm not too keen on studying sort of non-locality for the purposes of trying to get a notion of classical, non-classical boundary in the realm of states. But maybe that was your motivation. I don't know. So I guess I'm kind of curious.
I agree with your definition of classical states should be something that you can prepare locally with shared randomness. So I guess the motivation of this would be if something is not preparable locally, and I have these boxes to my disposal that use states like these, can I, without knowing what my state is, can I reveal that actually it's not classical by just using my boxes and putting them around and maybe using my copies of this state, which I don't know what it is, but basically can I test if it's clonable or not, or stuff like this? Well, no, maybe that's in the definition of how many legs the state has, but if I only always keep the same number of legs, can I concatenate my boxes like with broadcasting to do stuff with it and show that, aha, no, you're not classical. But with only two boxes, I will never be able to know. So maybe I would use it not as a definition of classicality of the state, but more like a revealing non-classicality with only boxes that use these resources.
If you're in the semi-device independent and assuming quantum theory, then why not just do tomography on your bipartite state? And
that's actually what... Where is it? This MDI self-testing, it does this. So if you know the measurements, you can do tomography. Then you can do remote preparation of the measurements, and then you self-test this. So you get a full certification only from probability tables that the state is entangled for all bipartite entangled states. But inherently, it works by doing tomography and applying an entanglement witness. So if you know quantum theory, you can just do this tomography and hide it device independently by doing self-testing of the bases for tomography. So this is the red one. But I would say that, like academically, that you can do. But then, if there is any connection with experiments, broadcasting would potentially be more robust to noise, or it would be an alternative to this. So if you only want to certify entanglement, this works for all bipartite entangled states. But I think it's more interesting for non-locality because superactivation doesn't work for all entangled states. So in this perspective of using boxes to reveal non-classicality, it's an open question whether all non-locally preparable states could be revealed to be such in this way.
Let me ask another quick follow-up question. You had a story to tell about why one should be dissatisfied with superactivation, namely, sometimes it just requires a huge number of copies to do it, and entangled measurements on those huge number of copies.
And it doesn't work for entangled states.
Do you have a similar story against the filtering approach? Like,
Well,
be happy with the filtering approach?
It doesn't work for all entangled states either. Actually, for filtering, there is an example of a state that has a local model even after filtering. So if you do one round of filtering, you get an LHV model for this post-selected state for all possible filters. I think I'm 75% sure this is correct. So like for the record on the video, I don't want to be recorded claiming things that are wrong. But I'm quite sure that there is a result that filtering, at least one layer of filtering, cannot work for a specific entangled state. But there is no such result for the other techniques. It would be interesting to know if there is a state for which, even after broadcasting, you can show there's an LHV model for this. I don't know. But it's a difficult problem.
Non-isotropic. Because isotropically, essentially, you've...
Well, that's for entanglement certification. Like, just this, you'd have to be in this range and find like some LHV, broadcasting LHV model in this range, too.
Relative to?
To a particular splitting, also.
Relative to the parties coordinating with a non-signal.
Yes.
Universe.
Yes. Yes.
I think I've come around to being quite sympathetic to your proposal that that's giving them too much credit, right? That if you just have a resource and you stick it in a one-to-many channel, all that's realistic to assume, given no further knowledge about the input, is that the parties who it's been broadcast to can share an arbitrary quantum common cause, because you don't need any, like for any input, it could ignore the input and generate that.
Yeah.
So anything stronger, anything weaker is not really motivated in a broadcasting domain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do we have any other questions from anyone else?
Well, you can always ask me. I'm around.
Okay, well, I think in that case, you can thank Christian again.